Intervju Radija Študent. Lili Lynch je odgovorna urednica in soustanoviteljica spletnega portala Balkanist.net. Balkanist je neodvisna spletna stran, ki pokriva teme z Balkana in vzhodne Evrope. Lili Lynch je rojena v Kaliforniji, študirala je na Univerzi v Berkeleyju. Trenutno ima prebivališče v Zagrebu, predtem je več let živela v Beogradu in še predtem v ukrajinski Odesi. Ob njenem obisku Ljubljane se je z njo pogovarjal Antun. Sprva smo jo vprašali, kaj je bil namen ustanavljanja lastne platforme in kako vidi vlogo Balkanista v regionalnem medijskem prostoru.
I think that maybe the one thing that at least I hoped in the beginning would distinguish it was that we were looking both at the entire region and in the entire world. So we were looking to kind of communicate with people across the region, regardless of their nationality or where they were living, what country they were living in, just through telling stories that were entertaining enough, like to kind of, and also accessible enough. So that doesn't necessarily mean that we've always been able to achieve that goal, but I think originally really and occasionally we still do hit that mark. That's the aim, certainly. And like I said, I also wanted to leave it open to as an audience that could be entertained or educated, but be engaged in some way with the material, even if it was about, you know, some the Balkans. So like people who wouldn't necessarily read about the Balkans because they were experts in the region or academics studying the region, but just a general audience internationally. And I think initially we did succeed in that in some way, to a certain extent. And hopefully we'll, in the future, continue with that.
What are the aspects that you find annoying that grind your gears, like reading about Balkans in media outlets from outside the region and inside?
That's a good question. I think that, initially part of the reason we started the publication was because, on a daily basis, I was annoyed by these things that were, I was constantly seeing. I'm very sensitive to, like, repetitive words, terminology. I've written this anti-dictionary for like things that I not necessarily wouldn't use to talk about something, but I just become very sensitive when I see them in an article or when I'm using them myself. I kind of want to be conscious of like how I'm using them. This kind of repetitiveness, both in terms of themes and also in terms of like ways of talking about the region. I think that what those things are have changed a little bit in the last couple of years since we started. I would say since 2014, since the conflict in Ukraine started, that now you have another layer of repetitiousness, which is this way of only looking at the region as part of some kind of geopolitical chessboard or something, or pawn, the countries in the region as pawns in this confrontation between the West and Russia, or NATO and Russia, however you want to put it. But before that, certainly there were similar kinds of like representations that I found. You still heard these things like between East and West, and now it's just more militarized and more intense than it was then. So I guess I kind of have a problem with people who don't know very much about the region, who are looking at it exclusively in terms of pro or anti-Russia or pro or anti-NATO or pro or, this not caring about local issues, local people or the region or what's going on here, but only caring about it in terms of one, other conflict which just happened since the 90s, or two, either in one camp or the other when it comes to the West and Russia. So those things bother me a lot, but it's really difficult to avoid those things right now. It's almost impossible to address. I mean, the first question I get anytime you know, anything happens here. It could be like, you know, whether it's in Macedonia, whether it's in Serbia, or even Slovenia, it doesn't matter which country it is, Turkey, obviously. The first question I get from international journalists who contact me a lot, or people just, you know, more people who aren't necessarily journalists, but analysts, they want to know how this affects, like, where does this fit in terms of, like, the confrontation between, like, NATO and Russia. And only looking at the region that way is very boring to me. This has kind of taken over the entire way we've talked about the region. And that's, to me, that's happened even since Balkan has launched. But I would say before that, and this continues, of course, is, like, you know, just obviously being a country, like, constantly on the brink of another war, one, and also always this word crisis has crept in, and, like, there's a lot, like I said, I'm very sensitive to, like, words and terminology and the repetitiousness of these words kind of almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, both internally and externally. So, like, I think it kind of not only, like, yeah, somehow, like, creates a kind of boundedness for, like, how you can write about the region. And I would hope that in the future we can kind of break out of that and break out of that more and more, even if it's just by using different language or talking about things or telling different kinds of stories. That doesn't mean that, like, we're not going to address, you know, these big issues that everyone's interested in, but there are other things to talk about too that, and you can even address those big issues, but in a different way.
What do you see when you're looking at, surely you're more focused on mostly Serbian media, because you spend most of your time there, but what do you see when you look, like, in the internal newspapers, websites in the region, how they operate, what annoys you about them?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, yes, I lived in Serbia for most of the time that I've been in this region, but I've also lived in Sarajevo. Now I live in Zagreb. I just am visiting Ljubljana for my first time. I can't really speak too much about your media in Slovenia. Serbian media, I mean, I can say it's pretty unique in the region. Maybe that's my bias, but I think that it's pretty hard to argue otherwise. I mean, it's like every day you're pumped full of this, like, psychedelic war porn. Like, you know, there's this constant sense, like, there's going to be a war breaking out. Because Serbia loves feeling like they're under siege by the neighbors, because it justifies all of, like, you know, a lot of the kind of dominant, like, you know, politicians' narrative there. Not to say that there aren't problems with the neighbors, but and what the neighbors are saying and doing. But anyway, so with the Serbian media, I mean, there's part of the reason Balkanist exists is actually because we saw the fact that the walls were closing in Serbia. We launched in the end of the summer of 2013. So, you know, this was when Vucic was was consolidating power. He was then deputy prime minister. But we could feel, actually, you could sense it, like, on, like, a weekly basis, the media space, the space for critics to say something was shrinking. You know, it really felt like the walls were closing in. So we were, like, we felt like we had to, like, just fire as many warning shots out there in English, like, as big of audience as possible. And of course, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's simply gotten worse. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of space in Serbia, really, at least for opposition politicians or for critical voices to say a lot that reaches a wide enough audience. Yet Informer, which is everybody's favorite, like, hate read, which is so weird, you know. I mean, we all read it, you know, pretty frequently to, like, see how weird, but it's like a direct line to Vucic's brain. I feel like it's like whatever his paranoia is, or whatever he's thinking, like, that's what it is on the cover of Informer. I think unfortunately it's there's not very much space for anyone left, and the publications that were slightly more credible, slightly, Politica, yes, I mean, still biased, but a little bit, I mean, still center-right and whatever, but they've all just gone increasingly tabloid, and And the question really is, like, how much softcore porn is in it or not, you know? Like, and so Blitz even used to be kind of like a mainstream, slightly tabloid, but still mainstream publication. Now it's just full-on tabloid.
How do you feel about these publications like Balkan Insight?
Balkan Insight, like, they're a great resource, you know, for people who don't speak local languages and don't... I mean, they have a huge amount of information they're generating all the time. I mean, my thinking about it is, like, they have a huge amount of money they receive. I mean, millions and millions of euros. So I hope that they would, you know, put out, like, a decent amount of information every day. I mean, I would love to have, like, you know, 5% of that, and I think that we could do a lot with it. But, like I said, they're an excellent resource. There are some really excellent veteran journalists who write for them and who are friends of mine and supportive of Balkanist and of me, and who've written for both. But in general, you know, I can only speak maybe to my experience in Serbia, because that's where I spent the most time. That's where I had the most experience with the media myself, and also with Balkan Insight. And that's just that, you know, to me, they're... Well, this is going to be the most controversial thing I'll say on the show, but, like, in a way, when Vučić was coming to power, it seemed to me that they were serving the same master. I mean, they were, like, so Vučić is an EU-approved person who has a very difficult history, and there was not nearly enough criticism of him and what he was doing going forward in that publication. And that's why Balkanists exist, and that's why part of the reason Balkanists exist, and part of the reason why we were so loud about it, because we saw what was happening, and we were like, where is anything Balkan Inside about this? I mean, you can go back and see there's very little, and they're quiet. And, you know, but then they obviously went very hard against Gruevski, but Gruevski is somebody who the EU didn't support. He's, you know, they're, in general, okay, you have some outliers like Sebastian Kurz, and he is an interesting character. But in general, like, in my opinion, with silence, you know, when you don't say what's happening around you. For instance, I had publications like Politica put my face on the cover of the newspaper with the headline Lynch, and there was nothing Balkan Insight about it. They totally buried the story. You know, this was Radio Free Europe did an article on it. You know, I had the papers in the US that wanted to write about it. I did not want to talk about it at all, because I was really, really unhappy. It was a really terrible time. But they buried it, and it was for an election in Serbia. And that's the election that allowed Vučić's party to come to power with a bigger majority than any other election since Milosevic. And so, in my opinion, and also, you know, they've had some issues with plagiarism, not just of ours, but of open democracy. And so, yeah, I mean, of course, I'm critical, but I really want to emphasize that I also think that they are a really great resource. I've certainly used them as a resource as someone, you know, who's not a native speaker of local language, you know, and they do come up with great news every day. Sometimes I wish, you know, for the amount of money they have, but they did a little bit more, because I know how much, like, you know, it was like do or die for Balkanists at certain times with no budget behind us. And I wish that there, you know, that some of these publications or NGOs that receive so much money, you know, lived up to the amount, or, like, kind of did a little bit more with what they had.
Poslušate intervju z Lili Lynch, glavno urednico in soustanoviteljico spletnega portala Balkanist.net. Drugi del intervjuja odpiramo z vprašanjem o financiranju neodvisne platforme, kot je Balkanist.
We are constantly under like a WordPress website. It costs nothing to put the website up. I mean, like cost like $30 for the theme. I mean, we did everything on a shoestring budget. It was founded by two people. We have relied on like small donations and paid through PayPal from people or self-funded it at times. Like, I mean, a large part of the time, but really, I mean, people submit pieces to Balkanist oftentimes because they don't see these stories being told elsewhere. But you know, always everyone who's been involved in it has always had to do other stuff to survive, like to live, whether it's teaching English or freelance or other publications. We don't have a, now we're finally in the space where we're able to kind of like we're able to write about the far right and received a grant to do that from Bosch, like in Germany. And so we're going to be like, you know, going hard after the hard right or the far right, sorry, in Croatia and Serbia. But that's a very small amount of money. And it's just like, you know, you can't really live off that. But, you know, it's not ever been something that we've done for money. Hopefully, I mean, what we could do, I believe, with like a fraction of what Balkanist like gets, which is a very huge number, a big number of euros, is immense. I really feel like we could reach a much wider audience and have much more critical, interesting, and forward-thinking kind of content. But, you know, it's donors are very conservative, and not even saying politically, but just they see who they like to work with, and they don't really necessarily on the ground know that what's going on. They're like sitting in Washington DC or in Brussels, and so they don't necessarily, and they're very conservative in a way that, I mean, I hate to kind of like say anything positive about Silicon Valley or like where I'm from, but you know, I do feel that because it sounds like I'm glorifying something I actually find pretty horrible in a lot of ways, but like there is, I always kind of thought of Balkanist as like a startup in a certain, in one kind of way, which is like we don't care about authority in the sense that like, you know, Balkanist, like some of these other publications in Europe do. Like I can say I'm just as knowledgeable as you are, or I have just as much to say, and you know, obviously Silicon Valley is built by like 19-year-olds who dropped out of college and started things. So but you know, people who are donors do not think that way. They don't think the way that people in Silicon Valley do. They don't think about, you know, innovation or like what's interesting, what is popular. They just think about like, this is good enough, and that's unfortunate.
The thing that I also wanted to ask you, like, you personally and maybe also the Balkanist as a whole mm-hmm. have like a strong social media presence in a sense there, and how do you deal with the pushback, and can you explain this phenomenon to me, the Potovi bit Serbia, how does that work?
Yeah, but I think that Kosovo 2.0 did a good article a couple years ago on the Potovi when this kind of like phenomenon started, just the bots would be like, it's bots, like this. They are basically pro-ruling party in Serbia bots that, either like fake accounts on Twitter, let's just say, and they're there to help shape the narrative. So anytime there's a big event happening in Serbia, whether it's Šešelj being released from The Hague, I remember this day, that was one day where the bots were really out in full force. Or when, for instance, when the new prime minister of Serbia was appointed, the first lesbian prime minister in Serbia, they were also out in full force. And like, they even made like a parody account of me, like this a crazy, bizarre parody account. The whole point is that they're there to kind of undermine voices that are either opposition or critical in some way, and they will challenge you or, you know, I remember when Cheshul was released and I was saying like, wow, it's a, like a brass band meeting him at the Nikola Tesla airport. Like, and he's been, it's all over the media, and that was absolutely true. Like you could go to like, you know, any publication's website and see it. And I remember the Bob's like, it's nowhere in the media. It's nowhere, and certain media's not reporting on it at all. And like they were kind of, so they just, the whole point is that they're pro-government, pro-Vucic, current president, and they try to kind of, in some way, create, instill a sense of distrust among international community or international media about what is true and what's really happening inside of Serbia. That's my interpretation of it. Yeah, and I mean, certainly for a publication like Balkanist, you know, or even now, nowadays, when we have so very little, like, you know, funding and also time, like right now I'm writing a book about the region and also like working on some other things, and obviously like researching that takes a lot of time, and you know, you have to impart a lot of information via social media, and so that, yeah, I mean, somebody mentioned the other day when I was on, actually I was on a podcast, they said like, you get attacked all the time. I was like, really? And I think it's that I didn't realize how frequently that happened, because it seems to me like maybe it's like living in Serbia where like combativeness is like considered like, I don't know, like my assistant who's this like 19-year-old Serbian kid was like, fighting's healthy, you know, like it's really good. But also I just like don't even notice it anymore. Like when people like attack me and someone like, this is what happens when you're on, like when you put yourself out there and you say things, like, of course people are going to push back, and like your job is to kind of like continue pushing, you know? So I don't even really, I mean, it sucks. The thing that sucks is the fact that we're constantly under cyber attack. The website, you know, I've had access to the site for, you know, maybe 50 to 75% of the time. In recent months, because we have had articles deleted from the site that were critical of the Serbian government, or and we are constantly dealing with security issues and pouring a lot of money into that. And I think that's also a lot of the frustration with these really well-funded publications that are don't understand kind of how lucky they are to just operate with not having to like put so much of their time into just staying alive, like just not having everything deleted, not having, you know, and yeah. So, and not enough people realize how important and how, like, how serious of a thing that is, and don't have enough sympathy for that, whether it's people in academia or people in international media. You know, they don't understand how much effort you have to put in just to, like, literally stay online if you're critical of the government, and if you're running on a shoestring budget on WordPress. So, yeah.
Just one thing, seeing how you're from California, are the United States, you know, of America good guys in the Balkans?
Oh my god. In some ways, definitely. In some ways, I think that it's more complicated than that. It's really hard to say. I mean, if you're talking about government, that's one question. I don't think you could even make a blanket statement about that, because I think U.S. policy in the region has changed, and even in the last couple of years, if you see in the first decade of, say, the new millennium, you had a different focus, which was like, at least in Serbia, which we saw, which was reforming the judiciary, making, like, promoting this idea that was continuing from the 90s of just promoting democracy and democratic, you know, promoting democracy, you know, that has a, for some people that term has a negative charge, but in some ways, you know, doing some good things, promoting a judiciary that's free from political influence. Suddenly, there was a lot of backtracking on that, and now you have Alexander Vucic back in power, Vulin back in power, Dacic back in power, you have center-right tolerated in Croatia, you have within that, within the ruling party in Croatia, you obviously have some extreme right-wing elements that are very scary, but the U.S. is kind of okay with that, you know, and that's to me, that's an unfortunate change, and, you know, we were supposed to have some kind of values that we were upholding, and now it seems like we've really, and I I personally think that sometimes those values were pushed too aggressively, and values, I mean, or our own, you know, objectives have been pushed too aggressively and undermined the, you know, sense of like these individual states having agency. But now we just straight up accommodate like some pretty bad values, and values that are antithetical to what we say we believe in. So it's complicated, but I would say on an individual level, like there are interesting, I don't know, this sounds really dumb, but there are interesting Americans like doing different kinds of things in the region. Like hopefully, I don't know, I mean, I'm certainly like not really the most interesting, but there are people who are doing all kinds of cool, cool things. But yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, you can go, yeah. You can go like Kosovo independence,
of course.
You know, military base in Kosovo. You can go like the NATO bombing and talk about the NATO bombing in Bosnia, NATO bombing Serbia and Montenegro, like you said. But it's hard to kind of like to break down. None of those things, I think, are, or at least some of those things are not all always like very easy to kind of sum up in like a few sentences, and need. I think that's also part of what we tried to do. They need addressing in a different way. I think one of the most frustrating moments for me in since I've been in this entire region was when our co-founder was on a panel at the University of Belgrade, and it was about how does Serbia deal with this past. This is several years ago. This is several American ambassadors ago. But he was on the panel with an American ambassador. I won't name that person, but. And you know, everybody was talking about Srebrenica, about Kosovo, and this was a very kind of pro-West group. There were people who called Srebrenica genocide. There are people who supported Kosovo independence. There are Serbs who worked in the NGO sector primarily. But I remember our co-founder said like, well, how should we talk about or remember or think about the victims of NATO bombing? Just because it's always going to come up here. The American ambassador stands up, pats our co-founder on the shoulders, and walks off the stage. Just that moment where he like wouldn't even address it. It was such an insult and such a taboo to even address for an American ambassador to the country, missing that opportunity to discuss. If you can't talk about the policy that you've supported and enacted that resulted in, say, casualties of civilians, like then what does that do for the future? And what does that signal to the people in that room? So to me, that's real, something that at least I feel that it's a space Balkanists has tried to fill. Like those things that are kind of a little bit taboo, and can we talk about these things gently, or can we talk about these things in a way that are respectful of different people? Because certainly our American ambassador couldn't, you know.
Z Lili Lynch se je pogovarjal Antun. Intervju Radija Študent.